This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Ruhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
this is the most important election in the history of Lesotho. It's an election that, if Lesotho is not saved from the grip of the current regime, it's all over with.
That's opposition candidate Machesa Mofombi talking about the upcoming election in Lesotho. Details coming up.
Also, Burundians are calling on their government to resolve fuel shortages in the country, and a new survey has bad news for Malawi's ruling party.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: Italy's police chief Franco Gabrielli is working to step up measures to deal with a continuing migrant crisis. He will meet with his Mediterranean counterparts on June 7th in what will be the first meeting of the European Relationship for Mediterranean Security, a gathering of nine countries to promote wider cooperation. G7 leaders had called for more established partnerships to help countries handle the increasingly large influx of migrants. However, Italy is concerned that it is still bearing the brunt of the migrant crisis. Now, with warm weather in full swing, migrant rescue missions are increasing. I spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome about the upcoming meeting, as well as other migrant developments in Italy.
Well, that's significant. The Italian police chief, Franco Gabrielli, is holding talks for the first time with his counterparts from France, Spain, Greece, Malta, and other countries around the Mediterranean. These talks will take place in Lampedusa in Sicily, and this, as we know, is the location where many, many migrants, thousands of migrants, have landed in the last few years. Now, these talks are really the first meeting of the European Relationship for Mediterranean Security, a new organization that's been set up representing these nine Mediterranean countries. They're going to talk about immigration, terrorism, and organized crime, and they're issues of great concern given we're still seeing the arrival of thousands of migrants arriving from North Africa across the Mediterranean.
Also, I see that there are calls for the French president to open the border and allow movement of migrants into France.
Yes, the head of a parliamentary inquiry, an MP by the name of Federico Gelli, has been visiting the main migrant centre in Ventimiglia, which has several hundred migrants. As we've heard from time to time, some of these migrants make the crossing into France. They get caught, they're sent back, they try again, and some of them have even been killed as they try to board trains or hide in trucks as they cross the border. Now, this particular Italian MP, Gelli, is asking the new French President Emmanuel Macron to open that border, allow the free movement of migrants into France. I don't know if that's likely to happen, but President Macron has certainly signalled a more compassionate approach to migrants, and he made that clear even at the G7 talks in Sicily, the summit last week, wanting to adopt a more cooperative approach, compassionate approach, and work more closely with Germany and Italy to try and manage this migrant crisis.
On the other hand, we have a mayor of a small town near Verona who is calling for no more migrants. Can you tell us more about this?
Well, that's significant too. As we've discussed in the past, some people in Italy have been very welcoming to migrants. Others have blocked the arrival of migrants. And this small town near Verona in the north of Italy is very concerned. It's only got 3,000 people in the town. It's already accepted 50 migrants and has said no more. We don't want any more. It doesn't even want an extra 14 migrants, and has taken to the media to really say enough is enough. And that's the kind of division that we're seeing in Italy. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we had 100,000 people on the streets of Milan supporting migrants. There's a very uneven approach across Italy, particularly in these small towns that feel that there's enough pressure on local people, not enough jobs, high unemployment, and they simply can't deal with any more migrants coming into their small communities.
And as you touched on earlier, the International Organization for Migration, they're saying that because of the fine weather that is there now, there are more and more migrants still coming into Italy.
As we've seen just this week, there's been thousands rescued this week. The number now of arrivals in Italy since the beginning of January is now 60,000, so that's very significant. We had 180,000 last year. This is really now getting into the summer season when the conditions are very fine, and most of the authorities here, at least in Italy, are bracing themselves for more migrant rescues in the months to come with these fine conditions. This is certainly going to exacerbate the crisis that already exists in this country and put more pressure on migrant centres to deal with the numbers coming in.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome.
The South African nation of Lesotho heads to the polls tomorrow. The tiny landlocked kingdom has seen more than its share of recent political drama in recent years. This vote comes 3 years earlier than expected after lawmakers forced out the prime minister and he called a snap election instead of stepping down. In Maseru, Lesotho's capital, VOA's Anita Powell reports.
The main contenders in Lesotho's parliamentary election agree on the most important things. The people of this impoverished mountainous nation need improved access to water and electricity, better education and health services, and more job opportunities. These are promises that the previous two government coalitions have failed to deliver, as their alliances collapsed amid vicious political infighting. That's why Lesotho is voting Saturday for the third time in 5 years. More than 30 parties are running in 80 districts, but the vote boils down again to a contest between the two powerful coalitions that have bitterly fought for power since 2012. But this is not, says opposition candidate Machisetsa Mofumobe, just another election.
If Lesotho is not saved from the grip of the current regime, it's all over with Lesotho. The corruption in this country, it's unprecedented. The culture of impunity in this country now under this regime is unprecedented.
Observers have accused the current ruling coalition of corruption and of human rights abuses. Mofumobe has been arrested several times in recent months on murky charges. His Basotho National Party ruled Lesotho for more than two decades before being pushed out in a 1986 coup. Today, it holds one seat in parliament. If his party wins any seats this time, he says, they'll likely align with the All Basotho Convention, or ABC, which is currently the opposition. They face a tough fight from the ruling coalition, led by Prime Minister Pakileta Mosisidi of the Democratic Congress. Foreign Minister Mampono Kgegetla is the party's treasurer. She says the political squabbles in the capital have been unfair to ordinary Basotho, and that her party deserves a chance to implement its policies.
These fires are here in Maseru, and they are not even from the people in our constituencies in the remote areas who want electricity, who want water, who want roads, who want clinics. As it were, we are spending over 200 million Maluti for these elections. If there was no election, this money could have been used to do these things that are useful for our communities.
ABC spokesman Moaketsi Majuro agrees, but the opposition blames the current ruling coalition for the political drama. The ABC headed a ruling coalition from 2012 to 2014, when an army-led action forced the party's leader to flee to South Africa. His party is pushing hard for reforms to the security sector, which has been accused of meddling in politics.
At the heart of the lack of progress and lack of development is instigated by short-sighted politicians and the security forces. If we continue on this trajectory, Lesotho is on its way to a failed state.
Some 1.2 million Basotho have registered to vote. Results are expected Monday. Whichever coalition comes out on top will choose the next prime minister. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maseru, Lesotho.
Burundians are calling on their government to resolve fuel shortages in the country. They've not only frustrated consumers, but are blamed by businesses for low profits. From Bujumbura, Moses Havayarimana has the story.
Fracas at the fuel station in Bujumbura is a symbolic of what's happening in the capital city. Frustrated drivers have spent hours, if not days, queuing for petrol. People often push and shove to get the fuel being offloaded from the supply truck. Wilfred is a Ugandan businessman who had spent weeks without fueling his vehicle.
I left my car at home and I had to walk to the office. And then I had to go back home again. I had to go back home by walking. I leave it at home and I walk because it has to deal with emergency things only.
The fuel shortages have lasted more than a month now, though 2 weeks ago, the situation seems to be returning to normalcy. Today, cars are seen queuing at the fuel station the whole day. Taxi drivers have been hit as they spend most of their time at the petrol stations. However, drivers like Ibrahim have taken other options to solve the problem. He says, because of the long queues and the uncertainty about even getting fuel in Burundi, he decided to save time and go instead to the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is about a 20-minute drive away. Ibrahim says that he has been negatively affected by the fuel shortages because he used to get $15 per day, but now he gets below $10. Taxi drivers are not the only ones affected by the situation. So are traders in fruits and vegetables like Francois.
Francois
says he has spent time at the petrol station to refuel the car, then travel to the countryside to transport food to Bujumbura. He says waiting for fuel incurs a lot of delays, wasted time and extra charges. The government of Burundi blames the situation on a technical problem during the offloading of the trucks that carry imported fuel. But a source in the government said that the major cause of the persistent fuel shortage is the lack of foreign reserves in the central bank. The European Union and the United States suspended direct aid to the government after reports emerged of human rights abuses by the ruling party youth wing in 2015. That's when incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for a third term, which the opposition says was unconstitutional. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
In Malawi, a new Afrobarometer survey shows that the opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP, leader Lazarus Chakwera would win the elections if they were held today. Afrobarometer is a non-partisan research organization which takes public surveys on democracy, governance, and the economy. The survey says the MCP would get 32% of the votes, while the ruling Democratic Progress Party, or DPP, would get 27%. Other parties would share the remaining votes. Malawi is expected to hold elections in 2019. But political analysts are expressing reservations on the findings. Sherif Kayisi is the political science and lecturer at the privately owned Skyway University in Blantyre. He told Lamek Masina he does not entirely agree with the findings.
When you're carrying out the survey, you need to have what we call a representative sample. So when you look at the number of Malawians, we are about 17 million Malawians in this country. So by having a sample of 1,200 people who were participated, in that particular survey, then there now I'm not very much conversed with the results, because the sample seemed to be a little bit smaller than the total number of Malawians.
Even the ruling DPP officials, they are saying the same, that the survey was not correct, and it was aimed at tarnishing the image of the current administration. Do you agree with this?
I'm not totally agreeing or disagreeing, but what I'm saying is that sometimes when someone knocks your door and say there is a war coming, if you're wise enough, what you need to do is you pull up your socks, you wake up your family and say, let's start running. So in politics, when someone comes to you and say, you are doing this and you're going to lose, I find this as a positive kind of thing that is shaking you up to say, oh, they pointed out corruption, they pointed out this and that, then let's wake out on this.
But the MCP itself says that is what they were expecting.
The same would be the case with each and every single party in this country. When Afrobarometer comes to say the DPP will carry the day, the MCP will do this, or the UDF will carry the day, even the smallest party in this country, they would still come up and say, yes, we expect the same. Now, sometimes the surveys, yes, of course, they represent the views of the people. But again, it's like a knife of two breads, whereby you would say, yes, this is what people have said, but what is it that you are doing on ground so that you can carry the day? So this is another assignment that I'm giving to MCP to say, yes, you can celebrate, but again, look at how much you are big on the ground and what are you really for the country.
The survey, on the other hand, has indicated that one of the problems of the ruling DPP, which can make it fail, is the rampant corruption and poor administration. What would you say?
Yeah, of course. By today, we cannot run away to say the reality that, yes, Malawi is facing a problem of rampant corruption. And we are getting this, in fact, from even the statement which was made by the president at the Ngorongoliwa ceremony. He did mention openly to say that, yes, there is corruption in this country, and the Malawians, we need to come together and resolve this problem once and for all. So if the survey is pointing out to say DPP would not make it come 2019, or if elections were done by December, by the time the survey are being carried out, then this could be one of the reasons, yes, there is a lot of corruption in this country. And the state president, Professor Arthur Mutharika, accepted that.
But the elections will be held in 2019, which is almost 3 years away. Some would say the surveys have been conducted too early.
The surveys were done in December 2016. What people said and what was the perception of the people by 2016 December, you can agree with me that probably it has changed. So things can change even overnight, and this is exactly what happened in USA. You know, almost 99% were saying Clinton is going to make it, but came a day of votes, things were upside down. We saw Mr. Trump won even with a greater margin. So the same can happen.
Sherif Kaisi is the political science lecturer at the privately owned Skyway University in Blantyre. He was talking to reporter Lamek Masina.
22 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. South Africa's ruling ANC party has called for an investigation into potentially explosive graft allegations against President Jacob Zuma and government officials. Two media outlets say they have obtained tens of thousands of emails and documents showing undue influence by the wealthy Gupta family. For VOA, Tuso Kamalo has the latest from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma finds himself embroiled in yet another corruption scandal. On Thursday, two South African media outlets, the Daily Maverick and Amabungane, published reports saying they've unearthed over 100,000 emails and documents purporting to show how the rich Gupta family unduly influenced the president and the South African government. The media reports appear to be testing Zuma's support within his own party less than a week after the president survived a party vote to replace him as ANC leader. On Friday, the ANC called the allegations in the media reports very worrying. The party called for creation of a judicial commission of inquiry to determine whether the accusations are true. Zuma has not responded to the allegations directly. ANC spokesperson Zizi Kodwa told ENCA TV Friday that there is too much at stake to ignore the reports.
If they left unattended, they've got a possibility to damage our people's confidence in a democratic elected government. And therefore, it is despicable that such allegations can be left unattended on the basis that they are not authentic. Our government must establish its authenticity to get to the bottom of this, because at the stake is the credibility and integrity of a democratic state.
Emails released by the two media outlets appear to show the Gupta family reviewing a potential ministerial appointment and influencing the development of government policy. One email appears to show links between the Gupta family and an alleged kickback deal worth over $400 million with a Chinese manufacturer of locomotives. Constitutional law expert Pierre DeVos says the allegations are serious and the president should act promptly.
Appoint somebody that is credible, has the necessary powers with the broad terms of reference, because this seems to be a huge thing based on the available evidence.
This is not the first time concerns have been raised about the Gupta family's influence. A report last year by the former public protector, Tulima Donsela, ordered a commission of inquiry to look into allegations that Zuma and his ministers have allowed the Gupta family to control them. President Zuma has yet to establish that commission. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Muslim holy month of Ramadan began this week, and Muslim Americans of diverse backgrounds and national origins started gathering in Islamic centers across the United States to worship and celebrate their faith. Mohammed El-Shenawi has the details.
Muslims around the world observe Ramadan with a set of traditional rituals. American Muslims do the same. Families shop at halal meat stores to prepare iftar meals, to break their dawn to dusk fasts with family and friends, pray together, and help the poor. Islamic centers around the U.S. host group iftar on a daily basis.
Fasting people will enter through that.
Imam Abdullah Fouj is president of the Islamic Center in Washington, D.C.
People from all around the world gather in one place, and we do all feel like we are one people, regardless of the distance and regardless of the geographical areas.
Muslim American families are keen to attend the night prayers in mosques and Islamic centers around the United States. However, when they run out of prayer spaces during the holy month of Ramadan, they find helping hands from Christian churches. Reverend Tim Helfen of the St. Andrew's Church in Virginia opened his halls for free to accommodate Muslims' nightly prayers.
We're all people of the book, Jews, Muslims, and Christians. And so for me, it's very easy to welcome people of the book who worship God into our place.
He said he is learning more about Islam from his Muslim guests. American Muslim Yusuf Zarwal appreciates the opportunity to perform his Ramadan prayers in a church.
Personally, I am proud to be part of this. I'm proud to be part of this message that, if anything, shows the tolerance that exists in this community. We're trying to show tolerance. We're trying actually to go back to the roots of what this religion is all about, which is tolerate one another, that we're all brothers and sisters and we're all created equal.
Since the early 1990s, U.S. presidents have issued Ramadan greetings each year to the more than 1.2 billion Muslims worldwide. In his Ramadan statement, President Donald Trump said, "I extend my best wishes to Muslims everywhere for a blessed month as you observe the Ramadan traditions of charity, fasting, and prayer. May God bless you and your families." Imam Khoj believes the presidential greetings have helped to raise awareness among Americans about Ramadan. With an estimated 7 million American Muslims, a rising number of Americans know more about Islam. American Muslims fast during the month of Ramadan while everybody around them is eating and drinking. For Muhammad Ibrahim, this is not challenging.
I have to fast because it's my duty to fast. It doesn't matter what everybody else is doing.
His wife Nadia is missing the big Ramadan gathering in Morocco, her country of origin.
There's a big difference here. You don't have extended families. So instead of having like 10 people around the table, there's only the two of us.
In the Muslim countries, the entire community is adjusting to accommodate Ramadan rituals. But in the U.S., American Muslims have to adapt their busy schedules to be able to combine long working hours with fasting and nightly prayers. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the VOA.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.